Oh, here we are again, back in these parts. Very, very nice. Nice to see Odette again. She's been out of circulation for a considerable while. And then she rang me up and said, remember when we were going to do some gigs together? Are any of them still going? And of course, they are. So, considerably less hairy trip up for here today, compared with yesterday, which I can only describe as being monumental. And we only had 50 miles to go from Hailsham up to Otford, but it seemed that everywhere we went, thwarted by falling trees and blue flashing lights. Winter's coming, we live a shorter day. The sun is hunting all for a play. Jack Frost's fingers are in the wind tonight. Ragged Robin is seesawing in the love of coconut shell. Well, he can't find the bacon rind, and hunger makes his red breast swell. Now is the time for fire and wine, fire for the body and wine for the mind. We will sing and play till break of day, and we will sing Jack Frost away. Cold October holds me over, damp November, it makes me sneeze. And then December, cold December, brings the frost to freeze my knees. By a man called Steve Ashley. It's a very long pedigree, going back to the old days. lived in Cheltenham for many years. And I was persuaded to move there by a group of other musicians who already lived there. Johnny Coppin, Dave Bell, Dick Cadbury, they were in a group called Decameron, which one and a half of you may remember all those years ago. They were the first band associated with the folk scene to actually pretty much write all of their own material with one or two standards, and they were exceedingly good. I first met Johnny Coppin on Brenda Wootton's floor in 1969. That dates us a bit. But then, just looking around, I can't help noting there are one or two of you of my demographic is all those years ago. Now, Steve Ashley, the writer of that song, used to run the old Swan Sessions in the winter by the fireside in the back room on every other Monday night. And they were formidable sessions because Steve kind of knew everybody. And since Monday is a day, even if you're on tour, there are no gigs, most astonishing people used to turn up if they were in the vicinity. Ralph Mattel sauntered in one evening. Hello, boys. Christy Moore wandered in. Hello, can I do one? Oh, I don't know, Christy, let's just look at the schedule. It was fantastic, and songs like Fire and Wine were born of those particular nights. Talking about a very long time ago. But we were in Cheltenham only last week and discovered the pub's gone through three or four name changes and it's finally reverted to its old name. It's called The Swan again. There, you really wanted to know that. First of several truck driving songs tonight.
Of my dreams, I'll go anywhere.
in the canvas of my dreams. So, first gig, six gigs in now, first gig of this tour, I did that song, written by my friend, genius songwriter called Mr. Richard Chindell, who, like me, is very fond of truck driving songs. And so this girl came up to me in the break and said, "Very nice, but the first song, why were you singing about a food mixer?" And why not? Anyway, the Romans. What did they ever do for anyone? the Romans, just imagine what it was like. You just finally, after 90 years of torment over the loss of all those legions in the Germanic Teutoburg forest, so 90 years later, Russellus Croesus finally gets his own back on the poor old Germanians, or Germanians, and so that first 5 minutes of the movie is the only vestige of truth in the entire thing. The rest of it is pure fabrication, but that more or less did actually happen. They finally got their own back after 12 legions 90 years before were lured into the Teutoburg forest, and they were all, you know, kind of broken up, and then they're still finding the remains of dead Romans even these days, because the forest is so vast someone will go behind a tree that no one's been past for, you know, sort of 1900 years and find the remains of yet another Roman, you know, and there's a brisk black market trade in helmets and sort of things like that. So just in case anyone fancies going to Germany and visiting the Teutoburg Forest, because it's an interesting place. But yeah, so there you are. So it's a year after all that, you're in your little vineyard, you know, in southern Italy, and it's been pretty quiet, you know. Then there's a knock on the door at 8 o'clock one morning, it's a sergeant at arms. "Good news, Lucius, we're going to Britain." "Oh no, Sarge, no, it's horrible, it's dreadful. They paint themselves blue, they cover themselves in animal fat to keep warm. They've invented the dreadlock, and they keep beating us at rugby." So yeah, 6 gigs in, things are definitely picking up now. I think we came up with this some sort of magic figure, as lots of other touring musicians did over the winter tours, that everything was something like 30% down overall. But there's obviously, you're all here tonight and there's a degree of confidence returning, which is rather nice. But we will continue not to man the CD stall, so you just chuck your tenor in if there's anything there you fancy. And I'll tell you about that later. And Odette's CDs are there. And that's about all I can say, really. Yep, they're all in there. Well, the ones I need, anyway. You know. I don't need the ones in between. That's much too clever. In about 78-79, I was sick to death of gigging, and so I went to work at a recording studio for a while, as you do, which was rather nice. Mike Oldfield's studio up near Cheltenham, where I was living, and used to do lots of stuff there. And the engineer there, a wonderful man called Paul Lindsay, he was like the Mr. Fix-It for all the recording studios within a 50-mile radius, which on one extreme included Monmouth, Rockfield, and then up sort of into mid-Wales, Lambeth, Carinian, mid-Wales Sound, basically, and everything in between, this sort of circle. And Ronnie Lane's was on the way, basically, and Ronnie was forever breaking things. I mean, they did it all the time, so there was this constant throughput. I was picking up stuff to be fixed by this engineer at Michael's, and then taking it back there on my way to Mid-Wales Sound, where I did lots of sessions on lots of small folk and indeed country music albums. And it inevitably involved visiting the Three Tuns in Bishop's Castle. Right. Ask them. It's like the bridge near us in Topsham, down near Exeter. It's one of the most amazing pubs. It brews its own beer. And I think the record for never leaving a pub and sleeping in the bar, for me, I was just stayed there about 4 times, I think. You know, it's like 4 o'clock in the morning, it's like, oh, I'll have another one. And then they kick you rudely to life at about 10:30 the following morning when I was young, I was foolish. Anyway, this long-winded and completely pointless story takes me to Mid-Wales Sound up there in the hills of Llanfair Corinian. the first time I ever came across a comprehensive country music record collection, which was owned by the chap around the studio. And I used to, after we'd finished sessions, usually about midnight, I'd go up into this little room and just pick random records and kind of learn an awful lot about the American country scene. And discovered a man called Hoyt Axton, who I'd never heard of, but I started playing the records and I realised that I knew the songs. Don't give a damn about a greenback dollar. Spend it as fast as I can, and I can see the smiles on the faces of the Kingston Trio fans here. You see, my parents loved the Kingston Trio, so they used to play that song. And I assumed that if it wasn't trad, then the songs that they were singing were theirs. However, Hoyt Axton wrote that one. So it goes on forever. If you plough through country music, sooner or later, by default, you'll bump into a Hoyt Axton song. But I was obsessed with his voice. A phenomenal singer in his own right. And also the album that I loved most was actually a very acoustic and quite folky album, and it contained the fiddle playing of a man called John Hartford, who subsequently, after Dave Swarbrick, became my second favourite fiddle playing hero. And this is a song from that album. Sorts of converted church type gigs. They're always exceedingly nice, obviously, and reminds me when I was a child, brought up in a Cornish Methodist household, and we were think the whole, well, I played the ukulele to start with, basically, let's be honest, and kind of moved on to the guitar from there, and it was all very much, this little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. Until this moment in 1965, when I was 13, 14, just under 14, and some older lads played me the David Graham album, and it kind of reset the whole thing about guitar playing, because suddenly there was all that stuff going on. I thought, bloody hell. And it's the album that I, guitarist, you'll understand this, it's the album I learned to break, I broke the F barrier on it, okay? You first learn to play F like that, and you can't help but hitting the open E and A strings, so you get a chord, which is, it is actually a major seven, but the major seven's underneath, so it's pretty grim, really. It's not not exactly nice. And then, so I sat and listened to that album, and finally, after a good bit of practice and blood and tears and sweat, you get to there where you play the full F, except that for the first 3 weeks it sounds until you finally, it's that moment, you know, wipe away the blood. And the moment you do that, of course, then you're away, basically. And you had to if you were going to play anything on the David Graham albums. And there was a whole mix of songs. I'll go into the bluesy thing a little bit later on, but I love this song. Because it's an unusual version of a traditional folk song. Most people box around the English version, which is the Seven Yellow Gypsies. So if you are a big fan of Martin Carthy and Dave Story, there were seven yellow gypsies all in a row, sang so sweet and so. But this version is an Irish version. It's somehow gentler, although it tells exactly the same story. Say it's on the David Graham album. Seven gypsies stood in a row, sang so sweetly through the air, sang so sweet and so complete, that it stole the heart of the lady fair. She stood in her castle high, smiling on those gypsies all, when a jealous thought came into her mind. Fall of the dark eyed gypsies go. Her young lord returned that night, inquiring for his lady, oh. Well, I'm afraid, said the old kitchen maid. She's gone with the dark eyed gypsies. He rode east and he rode west, until he came to a farmer's door. Farmer, farmer, tell me the truth, have you seen the dark-eyed gypsies, oh? Ride on, ride on, the farmer cried, down to yonder valley go, and there you'll find your own true bride. Dark-eyed gypsy, oh. Will you forsake your house and lands? Will you give up your little son? Will you lie on the cold, cold ground in the arms of a dark-eyed gypsy, oh? And lands, and I'll forsake my little son. Well, I'll eat of the bark and I'll drink of the dew. I'll lie with the dark-eyed gypsy, oh. Very abruptly, and there's no explanations at all. So, what did he do? Oh, right then, rode off again. Perhaps it should be rewritten. I don't know. My favourite book is the Sears Roebuck Mail Order Catalogue from 1895, because the Americans haven't done much useful really, but they did invent mail order. And so in 1895, there's a book this thick, and there's almost nothing that you can't mail order. But it, compared with what you can do these days, you know, so if you literally press the button and it gets delivered the following morning, there wasn't any Amazon in those days. And I have this vision of a vaguely John Wayne-like character there in the middle of Wyoming, 300 miles from the nearest town. And he's just had the best cattle run of his life, loads of money, and he's looking at the musical instruments section of the Sears Roebuck catalogue, which is quite a few pages, and you'll find something that looks exactly like this, tenor guitar. So I think C.F. Martin came up with the original in about 1890, and then most of the decent ones around like this one are copies of it, you know, almost millimetre for millimetre. This one certainly made by the late, great David Oddy is absolutely a copy of the Martin. So, yeah, well, we've had a good run. I got loads of money. Nothing to spend it on. Those boys have done such a good job. We're going to buy them all a small guitar. So, writes out the order, you know, for all these little guitars to give to the lads to play in the bunkhouse or home on the range. And then you go along and there's 100 pages of guns, obviously, you know, every kind of weapon that you can possibly. But you look at the back of that section, and the most fascinating three pages, I think, in the whole of the Sears Roebuck catalogue are the three pages of ordnance. No military people in the audience. Cannons to you. There's three pages of mail order cannons. It starts with a little boat deck cannon, you know, for sort of signalling the time, and it ends with a bloody howitzer. You could mail order a howitzer in 1895. What would you want one for, unless you were going to start a local war, you know, or something? But I'm saying, yeah, I'm into that. Think this through. Right, so he has to write the order, the money order. That has to be written off to town, which is 300 miles away. Eventually, it arrives at a factory somewhere in upstate New York where all this stuff is made. So, no Amazon. What do you do? Right, this howitzer has got to go to Wyoming. Well, you obviously have to tie it to the back of the stagecoach. 4 months later, the stagecoach rolls up at my mythical John Wayne character's house. And what if he's not in? He might be out, you know, on riding the range, like, which is his job, you know. Sort of, and then does he leave a note, you know? Is there a safe place to leave the howitzer? There's no punchline, it's just a continuous stream of thought about some extremely strange things. So there you go. Anyway, you could get one of these. I don't fancy its chances travelling from Kalamazoo to Wyoming. This is a song about a place I lived for quite a long time before I moved back into civilization. It's on Dartmoor, and some of the character profiles in this song are real. needs. But it's other men's cattle, wild water and feed. One day I'll pay for the life that I lead. I'm a thief from the edge of the moor. My uncle and me got it down to an art. We set off for stealing, not long after dark. Through the fields and farms where it's easy to park. And the way back home is stickier. One cold winter's night, after Tavistock Fair, stolen sheep in the trailer and rain in the air. We felt the flat tire and we reached for the spare. By the side of the A38, good Roman road. But the nuts on the wheel must have rusted in place. And I'm under the brandy with spraying new face. With only an hour to get out of that place. Cursing our bad luck and fate. For there's no transportation down under. No gallows in the old county jail. At best in the morning we're fine with a warning. At worst in the evening we're back out on bail. In the distance we saw a blue flashing light. 2 feet and a loud voice came out of the night. Asking if everything here was all right. And would we be soon on our way? Well, John said, did he go and get help on the phone? And in the distance I'm hearing his soft urgent tones. Black copper, he wouldn't leave it alone. His light on my back number plate. But instead of the AA, John dialed 999. He said, help, a court at the scene of a crime. A gas station, a robbery, a mile down the line. Come quickly, well locked in the gents. Well, I heard the police radio burst into life. He took the call, slammed the door and sped into the night. We worked the wheel loose and we clamped it on tight. Through the first gate all the shed went. Oh, there's no transportation down under. No gallows in the old county jail. At best in the morning we're fine with a warning. The worst in the evening we're back out on bail. So, come you West Country villains, if you set out to steal, keep your phones charged, always check your spare wheel. And if you get caught, use your wits, not your heels. Remember Michael and me. For somewhere there's a copper who's just hopping mad. And some farmer is counting more sheep than he had. And we're in the middle of the moor, at the wine house inn, with our pints really glad. We weren't born in 1803, but there's no transportation down under. No gallows in the old county jail. At best in the morning we're fine with a warning. At worst in the evening we're back out on bail. There's no transportation down under. No gallows in the old county jail. At best in the morning we're fine with a warning. At worst in the evening we're back out on bail. At worst in the evening we're back out on bail. At worst in the evening we're back out on bail. Thank you very much.
All right, who's next, John?
Ah, that's it. Behind you.
Another great songwriter that possibly not many people have heard of, but you have heard his songs. Again, because he's very well recorded by a load of artists, not least yours and my favourite folk rock band, Airport Convenience, and sorry, Fairport Convention. And I was reaching for the LFTs because I saw them on their second gig 2 weeks ago, and then 5 gigs in, Peggy came down with came down with the dreaded Opticron, and poor chap, so they've had to get off the road for a few days, but he's tested negative yesterday, so I think they're going to be back on the road in a few days, but it's a real bitter blow when that happens, obviously, you know. And of course I'd hugged him, so I immediately ran for the test just to make sure. But anyway, they're all right and they'll be back on the road if they aren't already. So, but they've recorded two songs by this guy, John Richards. And this is from an album I produced some years ago for John Richards, and this always was my favourite song from the album. It reminds me of an old friend, no longer with us, but an Irishman who emigrated to Australia. He was an academic, he was Professor Emeritus of Literature at Queensland University. And being an Irishman, he had made a lifelong study of the Irish, specifically the history of the Irish in Australia, and he wrote one of those gigantic glossy books, you know, and kind of the story side of it was, you know, he did that in a year, because that was easy enough to do, but he took about 4 years assembling the photographs. It was a bigger job than writing the book, because he really wanted all the photographs to be as good as possible. So he was sitting at his desk one day, and this envelope arrived, and I'd spilled some photographs, and there was this fantastic high contrast picture of a little boy dressed in ill-fitting school clothes going up a cobbled street with a little satchel looking really grumpy, and it looked like it was an outtake from the Hobbit ad. Just like, it's what it looked like. And he realised it was a picture of himself. He actually realised it was him. You know, and he didn't know the picture existed. It came from a random person who had absolutely no idea at all. And it was definitely him, you know, grumpily going to school in like 19, whenever it was, you know, sort of 1921 or something like that, you know. So, a rather interesting thing to happen, I think. And this song of John Richards, reminds me all the time of that. Singing, God bless America, from the F of hell. Rain and tears were only June, singing the saddest of farewells. Now she smiles through the sad days, but the glad days still remain. When she thinks of those who never will return to their Irish homes again. How she wished she could see them all. Dublin in the rain. Heading south on the West Coast Road, as they search to find their names. Well, it's a long, long way. Back to Davy Graham. I've said this countless times before, and I've probably said it here, but one of the things it did for me, because about half the album is absolutely indefinably the blues, because of the sleeve notes on the back, for the first time I got a handle on this thing that the kind of, you know, the British R&B boom was hinting at, but I didn't really understand where all these incredible songs were coming from, and this stylistic sort of thing. And for the first time, there were these magic names. Big Bill Brinsey, Blind Lemon Jefferson, Reverend Gary Davis, Blind Willie Johnson, Champion Jack Dupre. And I used to make a joke about that for years and years, until someone blithely informed me that, in fact, he moved to Britain, married an English girl, and lived in Yorkshire. She was kind of obvious, champion. And so I retired from danced in the morning when the world was beginning, and I danced in the Not that I mean in any way to denigrate Sidney Carter, who is a truly great songwriter. And in later years I discovered that was the song that was kind of the sort of Sunday school standard. But in fact, of course, we all know that he wrote some amazing songs like Crow and Cradle, John Ball, and all of those fantastic songs in it. And was one of the few definably songwriters who, of course, got adopted into the earlier folk revival as a songwriter, when it was mainly predicated on sort of doing that traditional thing. Him and Leon Russellson, and of course there were political undertones and all that. In the case of Sidney, and also why my parents liked him so much, of course, that he was a founding father of the CND movement. And I discovered quite later on also that my dad had been in the army, and in fact, at the end of the Second War, and then after that in Ireland, with another young lieutenant called Monsieur, was then later called Monsieur Bruce Kent, who was then the head of the Catholic Church. It took me years to prise that out of the old man, but I thought these old photographs looked a bit familiar, you know, it's quite funny. Anyway, so that's what I knew about Sidney Carter and all that, that sort of stuff, so I shouldn't take the piss out of the Lord of the Dance, but there are far better Sidney Carter songs. But this still remains my favourite. This is Blind Willie Johnson. And the reason I kind of mention it is because one of my lockdown shows was How the Blues Influenced Me When I Was Young. And it proved actually to be popular. I think about 3.5 people listened to it. And subsequently I had requests to take the soundtrack and make it available. So I put it up for download and made a CD of it. So there's one new CD on the table, which is the soundtrack of that show, with some of these songs on it. This is it, sir. Can't keep from crying. To do that, I had to learn them, you know, all those riffs, and I sat there in my bedroom. I stopped socialising, stopped going out, you know. It was a bit like a computer game before computer games, you know, sort of. And my mum used to come up and sort of burst in and say, "Why don't you stop doodling and actually play something?" So I had a strategy. As long as it was recognisable, you know. And so it just had to be a recognisable tune, and then she'd be satisfied and she'd bugger off. And then I'd get back to and so on and so forth. But, so this is the first song that I ever played at a parent teachers association concert, evening concert at my school, and they pulled me off after the second verse. Someone I went to school with, I haven't seen for like 30 years, and we were talking about these various incidents and sort of things, and I said, yeah, they didn't like that song, did they? And you remember they pulled me off the second verse? He said, yeah, it wasn't about the song, you weren't very good. We all know that we sort of adjust early memories and sort of, you know, move them around and try and suppress the things that we don't want to confront. And, you know, and so on. But probably this is what it was like. Yonder come my baby, she's dressed in blue. She said, love, what's the matter with you? Cocaine. It's all around my... That's probably what it was like. So look around, even with this modest stage setup, I have one of Richard Schindel's incredibly expensive guitar preamps down here, handmade by a friend of his again in upstate New York. Whenever Richard comes over, he's left guitars behind, guitar amplifiers, pieces of electronica, and so on. In fact, I could probably start a yard sale from the stuff that he's left behind. And we store all his CDs as well, so that if and when he does come back, he's got CDs to sell. But in this instance, I have a little piece of my father here, This was my father's mandolin pickup that he must have bought in about 1959, an old shower banjo mandolin pickup. Just thought you ought to know, really. So yeah, it's a very a Cornish side of the family have been very much uppermost in my mind because my mum died about 5 years ago. Her youngest brother died 3 or 4 days ago, and so he's the last of the Tonkins. Well, the last of the Tonkins of that generation, which is very sad. And so it was my grandmother's house. Killigrew Street is the longest and steepest street in Falmouth. It goes on forever. And of course, we used to run up it as kids because we used to stay with Grandma. And we knew the route well between the big Methodist church right at the bottom on the edge of town and almost to the top to my gran's house. And being a good religious family, as I said, we had to go to church twice on Sundays. And then it didn't finish there. Because when we got home, lovely old Broadwood piano, which my nieces and nephews still have and is still tunable, fantastic old piano that my gran bought for my mum and her sister, somewhere around 1930, I think. And so we would have to sit around the piano and sing more hymns, you know. Not less hymns, more hymns. But eventually, I think the whole thing would mellow a bit, especially when Granny started to bring in the saffron cake, you know, and the tea. And my aunt at least had a copy of the Cornish Songbook, which is it was compiled in the 30s by Ralph Dunstan, who's a vicar. And because there's a kind of dearth of Cornish folk songs, he just delved into Cecil Sharp, chose the 80 most favourite ones and rewrote them all with kind of references to Cornish. There you go, Cornish Songbook. So my whole view of tradition was distorted by spurious 20th century writing. This always was one of my favourites. You can imagine my aunt playing this again. Ding, 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 ka-ding, ding. She was a folk rocker long before Fairport. Ding, ba-ding, ding, ba-ding, bling. And we used to sing this song. Sounds very Victorian, doesn't it? That's essentially what the household was. My grandmother was, of course, a Victorian woman. Anyway, you probably know this. Have a go, you know, just have a little thing, you know. I mean, it might be a bit muffled for some of you, but you know what you're singing about. But just watch out for the odd word, which is different from what you might know. Well, here we are in this lovely church. It's had a bit of a lighting refit. In fact, it's positively psychedelic now. It's very nice. Indeed, yeah. What a lovely place to play. How lucky you are. Martin's got a string of excellent concerts, bits and pieces, flying the flag, stuff going on. So do support him and the gang. They've done a lovely job tonight. They've looked after me and Dex. And this is the last tour. John is retiring. My sound engineer, my roadie, and in fact, my carer. Yep, he's knocking it on the head. He's fulfilling his obligations to me, and then he's out for most of the rest of the summer with Gilbert O'Sullivan, and then that's it. He's retiring to a life of debauchery and all sorts of fun things, in possibly even in Cornwall, who knows. So thanks, John, for doing the sound and the chorus. Thanks, Martin, for promoting the guest. I have a little medley here now. Again, going back to Richard Schindel, who really is one of my favourite songwriters. And I say he and I share this affection for road songs and tracking and all this kind of stuff. So when he sang this song on the tour he did with us, 8 years ago, I hadn't heard this one. And I said, that's a fantastic song, you know, and it reminds me of my favourite road song of all time, which is, of course, Lowell George's Willin. And he said, yeah, well, of course, you know, there's no better road song than Willin. And he said, so my song is a sort of tribute to Willin. So there you go. Anyway, thank you all very, very much for rolling in. And don't forget, Betsy's CDs are over there, and there's a whole selection of old stuff, but mainly it's the blues albums, the one that you may not, in fact, have encountered before. So go and have a look. Thank you very much. It's the middle of the night on the Indian line. I'm pulling down a Christian station. Light years of nothing.
comedy stars shine through. And like the way that brings me back to you. It's 4 a.m. on the east, and it's the nature of the beast. Travel on to the time forgot, Martha and Stacy. But no, not tonight. We shall be sitting around the Patterson's wonderful kitchen table, playing with the cats and telling stories of old. Next verse, Western. Thank you.
town upon the river and the kind of rain that's heaven and rain. I even rode the back roads so I wouldn't get away. But if you get me, we it's been quite 2 weeks really, following my uncle sort of passing away a few days ago. Yesterday was very poignant for me in Oxford, because I should have been doing a double bill with another wonderful female singer called Rowan Goodell, and sadly she died 10 days ago. A real shock to everyone. You might have seen her singing with the Oyster Band and all sorts of things like that, so that's also terribly sad. And then of course Norma Waterson, lovely woman, very fond of her indeed. We had some good old chats over the years. Last time I saw her was at Wickham Festival about 5 years ago, I think that was the last time. So this song, sorry, it's in the same key I'm afraid, so I'm just going to go to confuse your hearing. So now you won't be thinking G. And that's all right, because the song is in the same key as the last two. So, I first heard this song from Norma, and not from its actual source, which is, of course, The Grateful Dead. The first time I ever heard this song was Norma singing it, and it's on a record with all sorts of luminaries, like Richard Thompson playing on it and so on. I love this song. I will have to crib the words slightly, because obviously I haven't sung it for years and years. But I'm very fond of this, so I'm going to dedicate this to Norma and Rowan and good old Uncle Paul. Some of you may, I hope, know this song. This is Black Muddy River. When the last rose of summer breaks my finger and the hot sun tells me to the cold, when the cat hears song
I'm a walker. It seems like